From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. The Amazon rainforest is burning. More than 72,000 fires in Brazilian forests overall this year, an almost 85% increase since last year. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro initially called it arson, blaming environmental NGOs for starting the fires. Scientists believe the fires have been set by farmers and loggers in order to clear land. Now, international leaders at the G7 summit are concerned, pledging help and putting pressure on Bolsonaro. He reversed course on Friday, saying he'd send some 40,000 troops to fight the fires. Well, the bigger story, though, is how profoundly pitiful the political gamesmanship seems in the face of how quickly a major conflagration is filling the skies in South America with smoke. Another climate alarm bell, and some scientists fear the Amazon could go from a climate sink, taking carbon out of the atmosphere, to a carbon producer. So this hour on Point, fiddling as the Amazon burns. And you can join us. What are your thoughts when you hear about all the fires raging in the Amazon rainforest? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Well, we will start today in Brasilia, Brazil. Jake Spring joins us from there. He's correspondent for Reuters, and he's been keeping a close eye on those fires burning in the Amazon. Jake, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me on.
So first of all, last week you were able to do a reporting trip in the Amazon. What did you see?
While we were there, we saw fires every few kilometers, everything from small ones getting started in the underbrush to raging fires sending pillars of smoke hundreds of feet into the air. It was particularly eerie at night. There was one fire we saw progressing every day, starting as a bright yellow bonfire near the road and then receding into the distance and casting an eerie orange glow into the sky. It was really striking stuff.
Is it out of the ordinary, though? Because I think a lot of people are wondering if there's been sort of an ebb and flow, may not be the best way of putting it, but a rise and fall in the number of fires in the Amazon for years.
Yes, there are fires every year, but this year it's up more than 80%, as you said in your introduction. So it's a particularly bad year, and people on the ground there corroborated that. They told me they'd never seen it like this.
Okay, never seen it like this. So can you give us a sense as to what the current firefighting efforts are in the Amazon?
Sure. So over the weekend, the military started to arrive, at least in the state of Rondônia. They're planning a response in seven states, but we've only been able to get concrete details for the state of Rondônia. And there are two military planes dumping water on the forest. And then the military is also helping coordinate the efforts that were already underway by the environmental agencies. So our photographers have been along with some of the firefighting brigades, and most of what they've seen is charred areas and small areas on fire that are being easily contained. We're not quite aware of what's going on in fighting the larger fires at the moment.
Okay. So we'll try and learn about that as much as we can through the remainder of the show here. But tell us, there's been a lot of focus on Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro in the last few days. I want to go back, though, and first have you remind us, Jake, what was Bolsonaro saying about Brazil and the Amazon when he was running for president there? Because he was pretty vocal about his views of what Brazilians ought to be allowed to do in the rainforest, within the borders of their own nation.
Right. So one of the principal things he did was he railed against the environmental agency, which hands out fines for illegal deforestation. And he said it's an industry of fines. They're overstepping and basically persecuting farmers was the dialogue he had. And he came out in favor of mining and agriculture and protected reserves, whether indigenous or otherwise protected areas. And everybody has said they feared that this would create a culture of impunity where farmers and ranchers would burn more, clear more land. And it appears that those fears from environmentalists are now being confirmed.
So is that what's happening? Is that the source of a lot of these fires?
That's what they're saying it's coming from. It's coming from loggers go in, they extract the wood that's valuable, and then they burn the rest because speculators want to try to sell the land for agriculture use. And there's been a history of these illegal lands in the past. There have been amnesties, so that it's a speculative move doing this, hoping that the land will be what's called regularized later and made legal.
I see. Okay. So on that point, let's hear what President Bolsonaro initially suggested last week about how he thinks the fires had been started.
A questão da queimada na Amazônia, que no meu entender pode ter sido potencializada.
So President Bolsonaro, they're saying, quote, regarding the fires in the Amazon, I am under the impression that it could have been set by the NGOs because they had asked for money. What was their intention? To bring about problems for Brazil. That's what President Jair Bolsonaro is saying in that clip. And later in that same speech, he also casted doubt on the Paris Climate Accord, saying if the deal had been a good one, then the United States wouldn't have left. So Jake, has Jair Bolsonaro retracted his statements about who he thinks caused the fires currently raging in the Amazon?
Yes, he's backed away from those statements the next day, but the rhetoric from Bolsonaro has been changing daily. From first, but even before that, he denied it was a problem. He said it was normal, and then he said Brazil doesn't have the resources to fight these fires, and then he said, oh, it might be the NGOs, but already by the next day, he had kind of taken that back. And by Friday last week, he was agreeing to send the military in. So we've seen rapid shifts from President Bolsonaro.
And what caused those shifts? Was it international pressure? Was it France's President Emmanuel Macron saying that there are certain deals that were on the line if Brazil didn't do more to try and to fight these fires? What pushed Jair Bolsonaro, who's pretty strong and clear in his, you know, his perspective on things, to step back?
It's impossible to know Bolsonaro's thinking exactly, but certainly his actions did follow on escalating pressure internationally from world leaders, whether Macron came out the most strongly to German Chancellor Angela Merkel, said she was concerned. Even the White House has said they're concerned. In the meantime, there have been protests in dozens of cities and also outside of Brazil, outside several embassies.
And internationally, but can you tell us a little bit more about the protests that have been happening inside of Brazil?
Sure. So I've heard about them in a dozen cities here in Brasilia. I know last week they shut down the main road that runs past all the government buildings. The same thing happened in Sao Paulo with the commercial street. I've heard in some places there have been people banging pots and people with signs in large crowds. And those I've heard are still going on now.
Okay, well, actually, let's just take a second to listen to hundreds of Brazilian indigenous women who arrived in the capital of Brasilia, as you mentioned, Jake, last week, to protest the policies of President Bolsonaro. The women there saying, the Amazon is ours, the Amazon is ours. So, Jake, just give us a little bit of insight about how indigenous populations in Brazil are dealing with this.
So indigenous populations are seen as being on the front lines of environmental protection. They're the ones who are willing to fight and sometimes even get killed in skirmishes with illegal miners, illegal loggers. So the indigenous have really taken the lead kind of against this historically. And there are those protests which are considered historic because usually indigenous tribes are very patriarchal. So it was a big step for women to come out. And women are sometimes the most affected by climate change.
Mm. Well, Jake Spring joining us from Brasilia, the capital of Brazil, correspondent for Reuters. Jake, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Magna.
All right, well, let's listen to the voice of another indigenous person. The Brazilian indigenous Mura tribe is really feeling the effects of these Amazon fires. Here's leader Handek Wakana speaking about what he's seeing in the forest.
With each passing day, we see the destruction advance, deforestation, invasion, logging. We are sad because the forest is dying at every moment. We feel the climate changing and the world needs the forest.
Well, joining us now is Robin Chasden. She's with us from Denver, Colorado. She's professor emerita in ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Connecticut, has been studying tropical forest ecology for more than 45 years. She's senior research associate with the International Institute for Sustainability in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, has been engaged in long-term research on forest dynamics as well. So, Professor Chasden, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You heard Jake there telling us that these fires are out of the ordinary for what we see on an annual basis burning in the Amazon. Would you agree with him?
Absolutely. This year is exceptional compared to previous years. Just looking at the last 8 years only in the Amazon, scientists at the National Institute of Space Research calculated more than 35% more fires this year than the average over the last 8 years. And the fire season is still going on.
The fire season. Okay. So help us understand just here from a sheer scientific perspective. It's a rainforest, right? I mean, that it gets the Amazon gets hundreds of inches of rain in some places every year. So when we say fire season, are they usually naturally caused or are they usually human caused?
In the current situation, these are human-caused fires. There are only known natural fires in Amazonia during particularly dry years associated with El Nino events, and that is not what's happening this year. So we can say conclusively that the fires that are happening now are human-caused, and the rate of deforestation has been up this year compared to last year, up 29%, even before the fires.
Well, Professor Robin Chazen, stand by for just a moment. We have a lot more to dig into when we come back. We are talking about the fires burning in the Amazon rainforest and the political and global response to that. What do you think when you see those images of fires raging in the Amazon and the G7 saying, well, they'll send $20 million for airplanes to help suppress the fires? Is that enough? Or are we missing the bigger picture? This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about those fires burning in the Amazon rainforest and the effect that it's having on one of the world's largest forests and thereby also having on the climate. I'm joined today by Robin Chazden. She's Professor Emerita in Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Connecticut, a senior fellow as well with the World Resources Institute Global Restoration Initiative, and she's been studying tropical forest ecology for more than 45 years. Professor Chazden, I've always thought that the Amazon is so vast that it's hard for us, you know, who have never been there or experienced it firsthand to sort of understand it as a whole. So help create a picture in our mind's eye here. When we're talking about some more than 70,000 fires burning right now, are these like 70,000 little fires across the forest? Are they sort of concentrated in certain areas? Where are the fires burning?
They're burning in very many sites, particularly along the southern, eastern, and western edges of Amazonia. Less so, very few are in the northern part of Amazonia. I think it's a big mix. I think some of them, I'm not on the ground, mm-hmm. but from what I hear, there's a lot of smaller fires, but when they can penetrate, they're really affecting forest areas as well. So they're mostly being set in areas that were where trees were recently cut and left to dry / on the ground, and the fires are being set deliberately to clear land for agricultural use.
I see. So what effect, though, then, does having a lot of little fires, what effect does having a lot of little fires burning have? I mean, because I imagine that you're talking about creating new edges to the forest everywhere in these places.
Exactly. And that's exactly where most of these fires are burning. They're on the edges, deforestation front, where there's been sort of chipping away at the edges of the forest. to occupy those lands. So what this is doing is it's shrinking the intact areas of forest. It's isolating, could potentially isolate areas of forest that previously were connected to larger areas. And it's increasing all of the vulnerabilities that go along with the edge effect. It will increase the colonization. It will change the climate of the forest near the edge, and it will affect the animal life very dramatically.
So tell us more about that then. When you say colonization, what does that mean?
That's just the arrival of species from nearby trying to go into the forest to find things to eat, places to live, homes. And when there's a fire, of course, many of those animals will fly or will flee. And later when the fire dies down, they'll begin to come back from wherever they've been able to be protected. And so in areas that are fairly close by, you'll see that recolonization happening. But the edges of the forest are not going to be able to provide. They'll have to go deeper into the forest to find the resources that they need.
Okay. So let's step back here for a moment, because I could given your experience, I could talk with you for hours about sort of really detailed level questions about biodiversity in the Amazon. But I want to look at this issue at a planetary level, on a planetary scale. I mean, we've seen, for example, President Emmanuel Macron refer to the Amazon as the lungs of planet Earth. Is that an accurate way of portraying this forest and its importance in the global environment?
Yes and no. I mean, it's a human physiological analogy, which doesn't quite work because unlike humans that breathe in oxygen and expire CO2, forests, they do the opposite. They take in carbon dioxide and they exhale oxygen through their leaves. So while the emphasis in many of the reports has been on the production of oxygen, the real key feature of forest ecosystems is that they're taking up the carbon dioxide and also that they're releasing water vapor. That kind of gas exchanges are the critical ones to focus on. And yes, globally, the Amazon, the huge expanse of Amazon is hugely important as a global carbon sink. And it constitutes close to 25% of the global residual carbon sink. So that forest, when it goes up in flames, it's not only reducing the amount of forest that we have available to do its functions, but it's also directly increasing carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
So let me be sure I understood you correctly. The Amazon rainforest, this one forest, is pulling 25% of the carbon in the atmosphere out of the atmosphere?
It's storing it.
Storing it. Okay.
Yes. So the total stocks of carbon that are stored within all of the vegetation and soils of Amazonia are a very large fraction, about 25% of the global total.
That's remarkable. That's a huge amount in one location on the planet.
Well, it's a very large area covering many countries.
But okay, so on that point, though, we have a question here that's come in online from John M. Cogswell Jr., who says, can someone correct me on this? John was under the assumption, courtesy of several of his biology professors from some years, that the Amazon rainforest, while a fantastic wealth of biodiversity, was somewhat carbon neutral insofar as CO2 emissions or absorption go, and that the oceans actually provide more CO2 absorption as a rule of thumb.
Right. It depends on what basis you're looking at this. So the terrestrial residual carbon sink is not looking at what is being taken up by the oceans. It's the terrestrial storage of carbon. That is a different figure from the flux of carbon and the rate of carbon uptake, which in a mature forest should be relatively neutral because the forest is taking up. It's also producing CO2 during respiration. And in a mature ecosystem, those are relatively balanced. But there's evidence that for several years now, the Amazon basin has actually been also functioning as a carbon sink because of disturbances that have created rapid tree growth in some situations. And that takes up carbon dioxide at a higher rate than in an equilibrium mature forest.
I see. Okay. So, About the current, I mean, the fires, but more importantly, that rate of deforestation that you were talking about. How much faster is the rate of deforestation in the Amazon at the moment than it was, say, at the beginning of the 2000s?
Well, actually, the rate of deforestation in terms of the numbers of square miles per year has decreased substantially since 2004.
Okay.
So if you look at the long-term history of deforestation, there were huge spikes in 1995, another huge spike in 2004. And then the government of Brazil really took control of the situation and launched a massive campaign to reduce deforestation, which was hugely successful. Up until around 2014, when deforestation rates started leveling off and now they're ticking back up again. They're still not back to where they were by any means. But in the meantime, a lot of forest has been destroyed and converted to agriculture. A substantial amount of the cleared forest has also regrown naturally just because some of the agriculture has not been has been abandoned, particularly pastures, which aren't able to produce well for very many years. So after a few years, they're abandoned, and the forest in many situations is regrowing. But the problem is that many of those regrowth forests are now being cleared again. So they don't live for very long, not long enough to really recover the function of the forest.
I see. Okay, well, let's get a quick call in here. Let's go to Julian, who's calling from Montreal, Canada. Julian, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I have a like something to say because I'm from Brazil. I was born and raised there, and it has been a long problem, this deforestation of the Amazon, and nobody does anything because of the illegal cutting of the trees and everything. But the government itself is very corrupt. Everybody knows Brazil has one of the worst corruption cases in the all the time. Like, it's very bad, the corruption there. And nobody do anything. You don't think, like, how the United States, Canada, all the top 10 countries in the world should step in and do something? That Amazon should be, like, a priority, like a patrimony to the rest of the world population, instead just, like, applying more pressure, like they are doing, like Emmanuel Macron saying that he's not going to do a deal with Brazil if they don't do something about it.
So, Julian, are you saying that you want more of that?
More of that should be done by the like United States. They go help in Iraq and all the other, like Iran, because they have interest in something over there, and because Brazil should be showing more interest in the Amazon,
okay,
because once it's gone, right?
Well, Julian, thank you so much for your call. Julian there, a native Brazilian, calling for more pressure to be put on the country from the international community. Professor Robin Chasden, would you agree or disagree with him?
I agree, and I think there's two forms of support. One is funding to help fight the fires and to help restore the lost funding from the Amazon Fund due to the pulling out of Norway and Germany recently. So there are fewer resources available now to promote sustainable land use in the Amazon than there were a few months ago, and the need is greater than ever. There's also a need for pressure on the part of consumers and agricultural sectors to boycott products from the Amazon that are produced through illegal means. Mm-hmm. And there are ways of tracking the supply chains and really being more informed as consumers in terms of the products we eat and avoiding those products that have been directly produced due to deforestation. That includes wood products as well.
Well, Professor Robin Chasden, stand by here for just a moment, because I want to bring into the conversation Joshua Busby. He joins us from Austin, Texas. He's an associate professor of public affairs at the University of Texas, Austin, a senior research fellow at the Center for Climate and Security, and he writes extensively on climate change and national security as well. Professor Busby, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Magna. Thanks for having me.
So I'm interested to hear from you what you think kind of is the central challenge here that both Brazil, but then also more broadly speaking, the international community is dealing with that's being raised with these fires in the Amazon. What are we really struggling with here?
Well, probably the biggest issue is one of sovereignty that while the Amazon isn't contained solely within Brazil, much of the Amazon is technically Brazilian property, even if the benefits to humankind are, as the Brazilian caller talked about, as the kind of patrimony of the world. Actually, this is Brazilian territory, so it's very difficult for the rest of the world to force Brazil to change its mind. So it can think about trying to incentivize the current leadership of Bolsonaro to change course, or it can play the longer game of hoping for more enlightened leadership down the road. But it's very difficult for the international community to force Brazil to do something that it doesn't want to do. And Brazilians are especially sovereignty-minded, as we saw of late in Bolsonaro's initial response to Macron's call for more action on the fires. But this is not something that's unique to Bolsonaro. We saw it in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s when Amazonian deforestation first emerged as something that was of international concern.
Well, so but on this issue of sovereignty, it makes perfect sense, right? I mean, as you pointed out, these are forests within the sovereign nation of Brazil. I mean, do we have other examples of how globally important natural resources, how to strike the balance between a nation being allowed to maintain its sovereignty versus and the international community saying, well, here's how we collectively think we should deal with them?
Well, Brazil's own example from the 2000s that has been talked about is a case in point. When the international community put a lot of pressure on Brazil in the 90s and early 2000s, the Lula administration responded by saying, we don't want this internationalized and have international interlocutors force something upon us, so we're going to take it upon ourselves to do something. And they reduced deforestation by 80%. Now, in the wake of that, the Norwegians and Germans and others began to support through the Amazon Fund these international transfers to try and reward forest conservation. But Brazil actually did a lot of the measures to combat deforestation even before those funds were offered. And unfortunately, we don't have the same kind of leadership in Brazil now that you had then. So I think more negative incentives and sanctions may be necessary, such as the threatened scuttling of the EU Mercosur trade deal. It might be necessary to try and have Bolsonaro reconsider his position, and also of wider Brazilian elites to think about the national interests that are at stake if they continue to not just support fires in the Amazon, but the wider clearing of forests illegally and trying to change forest protection laws that allow for ranchers and farmers to continue to deforest.
But so, Professor Chasden, let me turn back to you, because shouldn't we also be talking about sort of the legal market that the farmers in Brazil are trying to serve here? I mean, I'm seeing here that there's a lot of soy, a lot of beef being raised or grown in deforested areas of the Amazon. I imagine the U.S., China, other huge markets are where these products are going. Is there not some leverage there?
Yes, I do think that is a very important leverage point, and something that consumers all over the world can pressure their own within their own countries. It is on the table now with some discussions, particularly within European markets, and I think also it should be with China markets, which are big markets for beef from China, from Brazil. So yes, these are really important mechanisms that that we can use to pressure and to improve the supply chain and make sure that these products can be produced sustainably.
Professor Busby, did you have a thought on that?
Well, China is really important to this picture in light of the U.S. China trade war. You're seeing more Brazilian soy being sent to China to compensate for the loss of production from the U.S. And so 80% of Brazilian soy already goes to China. About 40% of China's beef either goes to of Brazilian beef either goes to China or to Hong Kong. And so we've seen efforts by the EU to think about points of leverage with the trade deal. But I'd be interested to see if the Chinese, despite them being especially sovereignty-minded, if they might be encouraged to be helpful on this issue.
Well, Professor Busby and Professor Chesden, stand by for just a moment. We are talking this hour about the Amazon rainforest. There are historic levels of fires burning in the Amazon right now, and whether or not that threatens the overall health of that forest and therefore the overall health of global climate. And we want to hear from you. We'll take a bunch of callers when we come back. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about whether the global community is fiddling as the Amazon rainforest burns. And just this morning, CNN correspondent Nick Patton Walsh described what he saw as he flew over the fires burning in Brazil.
These are the newest fires in the worst-hit state in the Amazon. We didn't see below us any of the 43,000 troops Brazil's president has pledged to the fight. In fact, in some places, it's so bad you can't even see how bad it is. That'll suit just fine those who'd rather ignore the world's most urgent environmental crisis.
That's CNN correspondent Nick Patton Walsh just this morning. Well, on Saturday, European Commission spokeswoman Mina Andreeva expressed a lot of concern about the fires, saying the European Commission is there to help in any way possible.
The Commission is deeply worried. The Amazon is the world's largest rainforest and contains one-tenth of the world's species. That's why we do welcome President Macron's intention to discuss this issue during the G7 meeting. The sense of urgency is indeed warranted. We are in touch, as always, with the Brazilian and Bolivian authorities and stand ready to assist in any way we can, be it, for example, by providing assistance or by activating our Copernicus satellite mapping systems.
That's European Commission spokeswoman Mina Andreeva on Saturday. And of course, just today, French President Emmanuel Macron said the G7 will immediately release some $22 million for firefighting planes to help fight fires in the Amazon rainforest. So let's see what people think about that. Let's go to Amanda, who's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Amanda, what do you think about the G7 throwing in $20 million for the Amazon rainforest?
Yes, hi. I think the $20 million throwing it in is what you just said a minute ago, fiddling around while the forest, our largest forest that holds 25% of the global carbon, is burning to the ground. $22 million is nothing. It's zero. The NRA gives $20 million to one candidate to run. What is going on? The people, the G7, these people that are leading these countries, they have no clue to what's going on, or they just don't care. But somebody's got to take control here. Some scientists need to get together, and they need to listen to the people that know what's going on. Mm. And the Brazilian man that came on and said how corrupt Brazil is, it is. And while we're sitting here fiddling around with $20 million and a couple of airplanes coming in, you know when you light a piece of fire, it's gone. Boom. 2 seconds. Boom. It's out of here.
Yeah.
What is going on? They're sitting over there at G7 doing what? They say nothing gets done at those things. How about doing something for the rainforest? How about getting control here?
Yeah. Well, Amanda, I hear you. I absolutely take your point. I hear you loud and clear. And I want to actually get the scientists and the analysts that we have here on the show to respond to you. So thank you for your call. Professor Busby, what do you think? You hear Amanda's plea that the global community isn't doing enough.
Well, I think one of the challenges with the current situation is that Bolsonaro isn't an especially credible interlocutor to spend that money wisely. Leonardo DiCaprio himself pledged $5 million. So we know that countries could do much more if they wanted to. Now, as part of the effort, the $20 million is supposed to be released immediately, and there's supposed to be a long-term initiative for fighting deforestation that's going to be announced at the UN General Assembly at the end of September. And so there I expect to see more money on the table and more of a commitment to try and do something serious. I think the President Macron needed to come out of the G7 with some tangible sign of progress that they're prepared to do something immediately. But the fires themselves are a symptom of a wider problem that is going to be enduring. And so what is ultimately needed is some transformation among Brazilian elites that the current course isn't sustainable for them and their own self-interest. And part of that is the potential loss of trade ties to other countries, but also their own quality of life. We saw Sao Paulo blanketed by fire that was dark at midday, but these fires could also affect water supply and rainfall patterns within Brazil. So Brazilians need to be convinced by the international community to change course, not just for the world's sake, but for their own.
So Professor Chasden, how much more deforestation and burning can the Amazon sustain before the rate of sort of dieback of the forest is faster than the forest's ability to restore itself?
Well, currently, the approximately 15 to 17% of the Amazon rainforest has already been destroyed. And Brazilian scientist Carlos Nobre, who's a climate scientist, has estimated that if that rate gets to 20 to 25% destroyed, that this could be a tipping point for the Amazon ecosystems. And beyond that level of deforestation, the conditions are going to become much more difficult for forests to self-sustain. And those forests are going to gradually become more converted to savanna-like ecosystems. And that's a particularly astounding and very frightening prospect because it's very difficult to imagine the Amazon turning into a savanna. Mm. This wouldn't happen uniformly throughout the entire Amazon. It would gradually creep in from the edges where the fires are happening now and where the deforestation has been so concentrated over the last few years. And there's evidence that repeated fires also create this savannization process, that they basically make it impossible for forests to regrow as forests, and they end up becoming sort of an alternative steady state type ecosystem. So we are actually not that far from reaching that estimated tipping point where we can start to expect to see those changes, and then that will definitely affect the amount of transpiration, the amount of water vapor coming out of the forest, going into the clouds, producing rain, and producing large-scale climate patterns.
Wow. Well, let's go to Jim, who's calling from Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Jim, you're on the air.
Hello, Magna. It's important to acknowledge the American connection to this catastrophe. It really is our consumption of vegetable oils in ungodly quantities, along with Europe and China, primarily palm and soybean oil, that is rewarding and driving this destruction. We should also acknowledge the political element here as well. I mean, Trump and Bolsonaro are closely allied. They're fellow members of this right-wing authoritarian phenomenon. And he's called the Trump of the tropics for a reason. And just as the Trump administration has consisted of a smash-and-grab operation against the earth, that has given great license and encouragement to that fascist thug, Bolsonaro, to do the same thing in his country, where the stakes are as high as they could possibly be, the most precious ecosystem on the earth.
Well, Jim, thank you for your call. Professor Chasden, did you want to respond? Did I hear you there?
I would just respond to that by saying, in the case of Amazonia, it's not so much oil palm. That is definitely the problem of deforestation in Indonesia. And it is coming to some parts of Latin America. That's true. But it's not a big factor. And the soy that is produced in the Amazon is mostly used for animal feed. So that I don't know how much of that is going to oil. But no, the point is very well taken that this has been a systematic policy on behalf of the new government in Brazil to promote deforestation in the Amazon.
So Professor Busby, I want to turn to you for a second. But there's something that our caller said that I just wanted to remark upon. Our caller referred to President Bolsonaro as a fascist thug, but I would note that he was, you know, duly elected by the people of Brazil to be the president of their nation in response. I mean, we had a big conversation just after his election with Brazilians in response to the corruption endemic in Brazilian government. So, I mean, I make that point that name-calling can happen, but he is the elected president of Brazil, Professor Busby. And and so he's the person that the international community has to work with right now. Has he shown, should we give him some credit in terms of like just the actions that in the past 72 hours that he is amenable to international influence or pressure on the issues on the issue of the Amazon?
He said lots of things. I'm somewhat optimistic that he'll maybe be forced to respond to the fires. But he also responded to a supporter's attack on President Macron's wife in turn by also attacking her, which led to a personal rebuke by President Macron in the press conference today. And so I'm not sure that Bolsonaro and Macron said he hopes for better leadership, and he's sure that Brazilians are ashamed of their current leader. And so I think this is watch this space. But I would say that President Bolsonaro has been emboldened by President Trump in many ways. Now, President Trump has threatened withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement, and the U.S. officially can't withdraw yet. But that kind of political cover has allowed Bolsonaro, even though they've remain part of the Paris Agreement, to essentially walk away from the commitments they made under it. And so the global moment of populists who aren't interested in environmental protection isn't something that's unique to the United States, but it's allowing other characters on the international stage to pursue policies that are hostile to climate protection.
So let me we've been talking at the global level, which is important, but Professor Busby, if I can for a second, let me zoom right down to the grassroots level in Brazil. Mm-hmm. I mean, I presume that you know lots of people who are working on conservation efforts in Brazil at that level. What are they saying?
I had an email from a Brazilian friend this morning who said that people are worried and afraid, afraid for their safety. There's a long history of Brazilian environmentalists being killed. Chico Mendes is a notable one that people may have heard of, but those kinds of murders continue to happen. You know, they'd like to see a moratorium. At least some of them would like to see maybe a boycott on Brazilian beef and soy to encourage a transformation in the political elite's calculus of the worth of continuing to support these kinds of policies. I think that, you know, there was a soy moratorium in that the industry voluntarily pursued in the mid-2000s, in which they pledged not to extend soy production in parts of the Amazon. That didn't extend to the Savannah Cerrado, another big part of the Brazilian forest, wider ecosystem. And so we've seen continued extensification in the Cerrado of soy production. But maybe there could be voluntary efforts alongside international pressure to get back to reduced deforestation again.
Right. Let's just quickly, though, has their work become even more dangerous?
Absolutely, it has.
Okay, well, let's go to Peggy, who's calling from Springfield, Illinois. Peggy, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm listening, and it seems like we need this giant change in the way we base our economies and in our cultures. And would it be possible if the world offered trillions of dollars to countries that have large forests to redo their economies based on sustaining the forest and the tribal people who live there? And we ourselves, it just seems like the cultural change and the economic change is gigantic, but it has to be done very rapidly.
Well, Peggy, thank you so much for your call. Professor Chasden, go ahead.
I'm really glad that Peggy mentioned about the tribes. There are up to 500 different indigenous tribes with a total of over 1 million indigenous people living in the Amazon. And when Professor Busby mentioned the issue of sovereignty earlier, I think this is important to consider because, yes, this is the Brazilian national sovereignty, but this is also the home of these people, and they have legal rights. They at least had legal rights within Brazil, and Bolsonaro has been trying to remove their rights. And a lot of the deforestation efforts are really designed basically to make life impossible for these indigenous people to continue living there and keeping the forest intact as they've been doing. So we need to also be banding together to support these people and doing what is needed to keep the government out of their lands. Mm.
You know, this issue of sovereignty, a couple of callers who we couldn't get on the air wanted to mention another wrinkle in that is that they're saying like that the global community should look upon its own history. For example, in the United States, we for 100 years, we deforested most of North America. Or Europe, 500 years ago having or centuries ago having done the same thing. That there's the tinges of imperialism when the international community now says to Brazil, save your forests. I mean, Professor Busby, what do you think about that?
I think there's some truth in that, but that's the past, and we're in a different moment in which this is a global problem, and so you have to think about contemporary solutions to something that we're all faced by. And I think that empowering indigenous communities in Brazil to defend their traditional lands and their rights is on some level, you can think of Bolsonaro's efforts to open up the Amazon as a sort of neo-colonial strategy by Brazil uh-huh. against traditional communities. And so the international community should help leverage support for those indigenous communities to protect the lands for which they've had access and rights over for thousands of years. So I applaud Robin's comment on that.
Professor Chazen, we've just got 30 seconds left, but I'm curious to hear. I want to know, can these current fires be stopped, or will we just have to wait for fire season to end?
I think it's going to be hard to stop, especially the larger ones. When they penetrate deep in the forest, they will stop because that forest is not very flammable. So we can only hope that the fires will die out and we will still be able to maintain a line against them because the forest is resilient.
Well, Robin Chazden is a professor emerita in ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Connecticut, has been studying tropical rainforest ecology for 45 years. Professor Chazden, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Joshua Busby, Associate Professor of Public Affairs at the University of Texas Austin and Senior Research Fellow at the Center for Climate and Security. Professor Busby, thank you so much for being with us.
Again, thanks for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.